Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Raheny Harrison Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I believe in Jed. Been with him a long time. I believe that he's going to put the best product out there for us. They gave us every chance to go win this year, and that's all you can ask for. And I know that that's their mission, you know, again, next year is to give us every possible chance to go out and win as many games as we possibly can.
That was Ian Happ. He was on with us earlier today here on Raheny Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. If you missed it, you can go to the Rewind feature, check out the Odyssey app, and you can go back to 1025. In the meantime, Jed Hoyer spoke during the 11 o'clock hour, giving his end-of-season press conference, and we try to figure out what it means for the Cubs going next. Number one was the discussion surrounding Kyle Tucker, and when you heard what Jed had to say, I don't think they're going to be the ones to make the first offer. Let's take a listen.
When we were at our best, Kyle was at his best, and vice versa. You know, there's no question he had a huge impact on this team. Obviously, he had dealt with some injuries and struggled a bit in the second half. But I think when you, again, we take the totality of the season, he had a huge impact, as we hoped he would. Obviously now we're sort of into free agency, and we'll be talking to Casey, and we'll be having those conversations. And so, I mean, like I said a bunch of times during the season, like, everyone can use a guy like Kyle Tucker. Everyone gets better by having a player like that, and we'll certainly be having those conversations.
So, my takeaway from this is we'll be circling the block, but not until after he circled the block, because he also said he's earned the right, you know, to be a free agent and to be a well-compensated free agent and all that stuff. So you're right. They're not going to fire the first salvo.
No. And what's funny is it's almost like they – you know how you would always say, like, make Josh Giddey sign an offer sheet?
Yes.
And the Bulls didn't do that?
Right.
I feel like the opposite is happening here. They want to see how much people are willing to pay him before they get into this. And here's my issue with that. You're never going to be the highest bidder. As long as the Mets exist, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Giants, you're never going to be the highest bidder for him. Unless you suddenly change course from the entire history of your organization.
Well, but what did give me pause and maybe a little bit of hope, if you're a Cubs fan, is the fact that they understand that what they tried to do at the deadline, after talking about starting pitching all the way up to the deadline, did not work. And they realize it's a different environment now. That's not going to work. So it's got to be an off-season thing.
That was one of the bigger takeaways I had, too, from what Jed had to say, was him acknowledging that the trade deadline market was so tight. And he said, I knew the market. I wonder how much of that is also defending the decision to go after Michael Soroka, because they said they knew that he dropped in velo and all this. And then we saw what happened. Exactly. And okay. And you still felt like you had to do something, but it unfortunately was the wrong decision. And his injury proved that point correct. So you didn't get the pitcher you wanted. You got the hitter you wanted, kind of, until he hurt his finger, and we don't know how bad it was. You know, you talk about the second half of the season. Another team's going to get him healthy, likely for an entire season. So how much are you willing to see what the difference is on another team when you gave up Cam Smith, who just got nominated for Gold Glove, Isaac Paredes, who had an all-star season, and then Hayden Wisniewski?
The conversation, I believe, starts at $300 million. Now, for the amount of
starts
years...
starts at whatever the Mets want to pay him. That's what it starts at.
No, I'm saying the general conversation starts at $300 million. So I'm saying that to say this. Are the Cubs willing to pay Kyle Tucker $300 million straight up? And if they're not, they can exit the conversation.
That's it. And he's right. Like, he's earned the right to have that free agency and that courting period. And we're still trying to figure out how he's going to... He likely sets the market, too, this year.
Yeah,
that's the other part of that. You typically want to see who's setting the market. And I feel like he, even injured, he's still probably doing that. The better question becomes, are the big guys, like Dodgers and the like, who I just mentioned, Phillies, et cetera, are they willing to spend less because of the CBA that might be impending? Because he didn't shy away from that either, Jed Hoyer. Did you notice that? That he acknowledged that in a way that lets you know that it is affecting their decisions.
He said the closer we get, what I thought was remarkable is he said the closer we get to it. I was like, well, you're not getting any closer to it than right now, because
there are a lot of unrestricted free agents on this team after the 2026 season. Nico Hoerner, for one. That's a big deal. You know, Justin Turner still due 10. I got to see what the numbers are. That's according to SpotRac. I think that's if they retain him. I'm pretty sure. So that's how I got to look at that. I knew he was 1 year for six, and then there was some sort of like option there. It's the Shota Imanaga contract that deserves the most discussion in all of this, because that's something that we had been trying to get a hold of information wise for a while. We got parts of it, and then Patrick Mooney of The Athletic actually clarified it more deeply this morning. Now, what we understand is, at least what I was told initially, was that it's not just a club option. It was a club and a player option that then enacted other results. You have more information from the Mooney article this morning.
Well, it's a mutual option, as you said, and it's not as simple as, oh, if you don't want it, we'll do this. If you do want it, we'll do this. It's very layered. So here's the first layer.
It's one of the more, it's not that it's complicated. It's just that there's so many hinges to it that there was no way to say this without like taking some serious time. This is Raheem Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. And this is us trying to figure out what the heck is in Shota Imanaga's contract.
So I thought Patrick Mooney in The Athletic did a great job of laying this out. The Cubs have one half of that mutual option for next year. And by exercising their option, the Cubs can lock in Imanaga for the 26, 27, and 28 seasons at a total cost of $57.75 million. That's what the Cubs can do.
Total cost, meaning throughout the rest of the contract?
Right.
Because, for example, right now, like this year, Shota for 2026 is due 20 and a half. And that would be the case in 2027. In 2028, it was 17.25.
Right. So now,
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If the Cubs declined that option, the one I just described, for this $57.75 million over the next 3 years, he would gain, Imanaga, a $15.25 million player option for 2026. So if they'd say no to that, he can still opt in and say, I'll take that $15.25 million player option. He would also have another player option for 2027, meaning he would be guaranteed at minimum $30.5 million over the next two seasons. So you see what he can do if he decides he wants to opt in, but the Cubs do not opt in on the bigger portion, the 3 years.
The Cubs have to decide whether or not they want to pay him an average of $5 million over that time, more than what he would get if it's his decision.
Exactly. So now the Cubs could then instead make Imanaga a one-year qualifying offer worth slightly more than $22 million. And that move would tie his free agency to draft pick compensation and potentially limit his options. So he could go elsewhere, but they get stuff back.
Imanaga is 32 this year. Is that correct? I need to look.
Shota Imanaga, as of right now, is 32 years, 1 month, and 14 days old.
Wow, I shorted him a month and 14 days. Sorry about that, Shota. Yeah, I knew he was 32. So I think that factors in as well in all of this is the age season.
All right, so there's one final scenario. This is the least likely of all things to happen. If Imanaga exercises his first player option, the Cubs then would then hold a two-year option for 2027 and 2028.
But would they have to accept both years at the same time, or would they be options each year?
I believe they're option 1 year at a time. The first one, 2027, $24.25 million, and 2028, which would be $18.25 million. You see how it would go down year after year.
Which makes sense, correlating to age.
Yes. So it's a very layered, nuanced contract, and it gives everybody options. And the Cubs, again, he could not be a Cub next season, and they could offer him that one-year qualifying offer and still give stuff back, at least in draft compensation, if he signs with someone else.
And it sounds like the Cubs would have to pay him to go away, too, which is not what you want. Like, you don't want, especially when that $15 million is a big deal to the Cubs.
If you know you're going to have to pay the $15, he's going to be on the roster. That's why I believe he will be on the roster next year. Now, is he going to be viewed as the same level starter as we saw at the start of this season? Maybe, maybe not, because, you know, they've got the pitching lab. They can fix things. I mean, he's a fly ball pitcher. We can't fix that. That's just the nature of what he does.
Well, they knew that going in.
And if his velocity is down, if his location is off, the balls fly out of the yard.
And what was surprising was Jed Hoyer wasn't – he talked about how good of a teammate he was and how much he likes having him with the organization. He said they were going to decide on this in the next couple of weeks. And for him to even say that much, I thought was pretty pointed. That made it sound like it might not be as automatic as one's thought. And if they're saying that they've got that much money to pay people to go away, then that might be a pretty good indicator that they have more money than we think they have.
I'm telling you, I really think that the difference is going to be the postseason success, having the games at Wrigley, plus understanding we can't do as much around the margins once the season starts as we could in seasons past. That's a reality.
Yeah, and when you look at who all is available, and again, I go by Spot Rack, but I know sometimes like they don't have all the details like that. You know, when you consider who comes off of the books based on the contracts and how they're constructed, there are quite a few players who this is their last official year under contract. Now, there's arbitration options with some of them. There's pre-arb with guys like Matt Shaw, which makes sense. But, like, it's pretty interesting to see who is no longer with the team according to these contracts after 2026. They have some real serious decisions they want to make as far as extensions are concerned. And you would get the indication that they might be doing this knowing that a stoppage is on the other side.
Cubs have been very clear. We don't want anything on the books that we can't control past 2026.
And if you think they're bad, look at how many contracts are signed after 2026 for the Baltimore Orioles.
None.
One.
Or is it one?
It's one.
Is that a player they have team control over? Is that why?
Yeah, and I forget. It's one of the big name, like, younger players they've got. So, yeah.
They've been shedding.
It's scary. So, when you consider that, that kind of makes it all make a little more sense. We have more to come here on Raheem Harris and Grody on 670 The Score. Now, we understand that the Pope may have chimed in on the baseball playoffs. I've said this before. I don't know that I can handle a Pope talking about Chicago sports. But people are yelling at him in parades and stuff. So let's take a listen to what Pope Leo had to say. Next.
The Pope.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.